Good morning, everybody. If you were up at 7 and turned on the cable, you probably saw our program, and it was a very good program. Introduced some concepts about Christianity that I thought were very good. The only problem is that they turned it off a little too soon, and our little 30-second blurb that advertises us specifically wasn't on there, so we still have a few little bugs to work out. So I will contact the IT guy Monday or Tuesday, and we'll see.
They had our name and everything at the beginning.
At the beginning?
Yes.
Well, that's even better.
I thought they announced it twice.
That's good. I didn't know that. See, I turned it on a little bit late, so I didn't see that. So that's good. Well, that's even better.
I didn't see it either.
You didn't see it?
I'm Church of Christ, but I didn't see it.
Yeah.
At the very beginning, then. That's good. Yeah, that's good, because that's even better if they have it at the beginning. That's even better. Because it is separate. It's on a separate little segment of the DVD. So, you know, I just assumed, since I turned it on a little bit late, that it didn't run at all. But I'm glad to hear that it did. That's very good. It's very good. How did it look to you?
I thought it looked real good.
Yeah.
Don't give a preacher thing.
That's fine. I didn't want it. I mean, we want this to focus on just, you know, and traditionally they don't put the preacher's name. They want to just focus on the church and the message. So that's a good thing.
You say that they would advertise the Church of Christ on churches.
Right.
Well, I never did see that. I heard you said that.
All it does is just say churches sponsored by Churches of Christ, very small at the bottom, at the very end, and as they run through the thing, it doesn't really list anything more. It has the separate segment, and ours evidently has it. You know, they ran it at the very beginning, so.
But he did invite everybody to the Church of Christ.
Yeah, the local Church of Christ. How did he phrase it? I thought it was very interesting the way he phrased it. They love visitors. They love visitors. So hopefully, you know, I mean, that's the way they talked about it. So it was very good, I thought. Very good. And he has a very good voice. How old do you think the guy is that was doing the Phil Sanders? He's 57. He's older than me. But I look older than he, because I've got white hair. He's got dark hair. Anyway, how old is Mac Lyon? I told you the other day, so don't get. Mac Lyon is 87. There's 30 years difference between Mac and Phil. Mac Lyon is 87. He's been doing this for 20 some odd years, you know, and it's phenomenal, the stuff he's got. Anyway, I was very pleased with it, and I hope that as soon as we, you know, get everything a few days in a few weeks in a row, we'll do some advertising and things like that. With the help of, we've got some ideas. We'll try to get all that done. Yes.
Hey, when they had the singing, did you notice how the singers were holding their books?
Yes, my wife mentioned that. My wife said, they're all holding it at exactly the same angle. They've been coached. And I says, they've been doing this for 20-some-odd years. They probably don't know any difference, you know, because they're always filmed. So, all right. We're in Revelation chapter 2. So take a look there. We're going to pick up we're still looking at Smyrna. So let's remind ourselves what is going on here at Smyrna, beginning with Revelation chapter 2 and verse 8. Let me go ahead and turn to that in my Bible real quick. I was looking at something else and didn't get it back. Yes, go ahead.
We had a man who came out years and years ago from, I don't know, Christian church or whatever, and he was telling us how to sing.
Yeah.
And how to hold the book and where to sing from, you know, down here.
Uh-huh.
And every time I have my book down, I think of that man. Put that book up here where you can see it. Your voice go that away. It's not supposed to be, oh, I may not do it, but I think of it.
Yeah, I do too. But I don't ever do it exactly right either, so. All right. And to the angel of the church in Smyrna, write, these things says the first and the last, who was dead and came to life. I know your works, tribulation, and poverty, but you are rich. And I know the blasphemy of those who say they are Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan. Do not fear any of those things which you are about to suffer. Indeed, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison that you may be tested. And you will have tribulation 10 days. Be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. He who overcomes shall not be hurt by the second death. Now, we've looked at some of this, but let's just remind ourselves and try to get everything kind of gelled together as we look at this church at Smyrna. And he talks about the 10 days. Remember, that is simply symbolic of the time of their persecution. It's not a literal number. It doesn't mean that they will be in prison a literal 10 days. 10 is the number for something that is complete, a period of time that is complete. And so there is a sense here that we need to understand that the partaking of Christ's sufferings, our conforming to his death, the taking up of the cross, being crucified with Christ, all of that is stressed throughout the New Testament. And it is part of our walk as a Christian. And so there is a sense in which all of us will encounter this type of thinking. Remember, the idea of being in prison is the idea of being held back, being shut up. And in a sense, that's exactly what the world wants to do. The world wants to say, shut up. Don't talk. Don't say anything about Jesus. Don't say anything about God. Don't say anything about your faith. And when we do that, we are shut up in a prison. The prison is really, in many places, it's actually physical, but most of the time it's actually mental. We're in a prison of our own making because we choose to allow ourselves to be shut up. And so that's part of what we've got here in this talking. He says that there's a period of time that is complete. When he goes on, he says, don't fear any of those things which you are about to suffer. Again, he's telling us that there is something about suffering that is part of Christianity. Now, that is not today's message. In fact, is part of today's message, even as it applies to Revelation, is the rethinking of Revelation in terms of this mystical rapture where the church is taken away before the period of tribulation occurs, because God surely would not want his people to suffer. But what's the real message of Revelation is that all Christians are going to what? All Christians are going to suffer. Because the suffering, notice this word here, is so that we may be tested. Remember that word tested there is the word that describes something being measured and weighed so you can find out exactly its quantity when it's talking about something that is physical, that is measured and weighed, or its quality when it's talking about a person. It's the idea that we can measure or weigh a person through their circumstances and their reaction. You can find out exactly what they're made of. We're being measured and weighed. We can find out exactly what we're made of, what we are in the eyes of God, by how we react to the things that we suffer. So suffering is part of Christianity. But we don't usually talk about that. Go ahead.
In 2 Timothy 3:12, it said, yes, and all that will live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution.
Exactly.
I had
all
a lady come to me one time, and she said, I don't feel like I've ever suffered persecutions. So what do you think that is? Do you think I'm living right? And why she put me on it?
Well, what is persecution? That's a good question, actually. Before you answer, tell us how you answered the lady. Let's ask it right here. What do you think persecution is?
Well, I think it's when people
I mean, generally, we tend to put persecution only in one category, you know, like the Romans throwing them to the lions and things like that. But what is persecution? Good.
Come from your family.
Right.
The snaps or the way they say things about you.
Okay.
They hurt.
Right.
And another thing, it's if you not come to church. That's one of the main things. Well, you don't have to go to church today. You don't have to go to nap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got coming at home. But they didn't go in here.
Good point. Go ahead, Philip. I thought you had your hand. Oh, it was an ankle behind you. Sorry.
I was just going to say that when you're talking with them, the laughter and some of the remarks they make.
Okay. Carl? Many times it's self-inflicted? Okay. Persecution is anything that attempts to make someone stop. How did you describe it to the lady that you were talking to?
I had a hard time. I told her it was an everyday thing and she wasn't going to be beaten or
right.
Something like that.
Yeah, there are degrees, aren't there?
Yeah.
It's persecution is anything that happens that tries to make you stop. So in the context here, the image that is there is that the devil is about to throw some of you into that prison, wanting to make you stop. It's like when in the book of Acts, in Acts chapter 3 and 4, we've got Peter and John and James being constantly harassed and thrown into jail, ordered not to speak in the name of Jesus, let loose. What do they immediately start doing? Wow, we're going to tell you about Jesus. And they get arrested again, and they get thrown out again. And then, you know, I mean, they were trying to stop them from talking about Jesus. That's persecution. Now, it can be very subtle. It can be very drastic. Go ahead. Ultimately, the picture we have in Revelation is that the devil's behind it. Yes.
Okay, like nowadays, though, like, you know, when you're persecuted and stuff, so he's hoping, okay, that we're going to stop, we're not going to worship God because this happened. And
that's what the devil wants to happen. He wants us to be stopped from worshiping and talking about him and proclaiming him and learning. And really, ultimately, what would be Satan's ultimate goal with regard to each of us individually? What does he want? What do you think?
He wants me on his side.
That's right. He wants us on his side. And how do we get on his side?
By stopping.
Yes, by stopping. See, getting on his side is a default position. If we stop living for Jesus, stop, you know, having a firm stand for Jesus, we automatically go to his side. See, so there's most of the world is in the control or in the sway of the devil, whether they realize it or not. Now, there is free will, right? I mean, the devil very rarely can make someone do something, but he is certainly the one that influences everything, and he's the power behind the picture here. Now, When Jesus is talking to this church, he says, "Be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life." Now, what does he mean when he's saying, "Be faithful until death"? Okay. A little bit more than just what he says. What does it mean exactly? Got any idea?
Be a follower of God.
Yeah, be a follower of God no matter what. Right? What'd you say?
What happens?
No matter what happens, exactly. See, what he's saying here is a reminder that we need to keep on being. Literally, the Greek here says keep on or go on being faithful. You know, when we read it in English, look back. It says be faithful unto death. It should be go on being faithful until death is the actual phraseology there. So there's the idea that this is an ongoing thing. It's something that we start and we should finish. Okay? The crown that he's telling us about here is the Stephanos. And there's two different kinds of crowns that are mentioned in Scripture. One is the diadem, or diadema, a diadem. We sometimes sing a song that has the word diadem in it, so that's why I use diadem. That's just an English way of saying this Greek word, diadema. A diadem is worn by royalty. It's the kind of crown that you know that a king would wear, or a prince would wear, or a princess would wear, or a queen. But a Stephanos, here's what a Stephanos is. You remember the Olympics that were held in Athens a couple of years ago? This is from one of the gold medal ceremonies. And you had someone come and they placed around the guy's head a Stephanos. Okay? That's a Stephanos. It's a wreath that symbolizes that you are what? You are a winner. Exactly. Turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 9. Look with me at verses 24 to 27, where you have the same word that is used in the same way that it's being talked about now in Revelation. Paul is writing, he says, "Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but one receives the prize?" He's using the imagery of the Olympics. "Run in such a way that you may obtain it. And everyone who competes for the prize is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a perishable crown. But we for an imperishable crown." Well, the word crown here in 1 Corinthians 9 is Stephanos. It's that kind of crown. It symbolizes victory. So what Jesus is promising is that, hey, if you continue to... let's go back. If you continue to be faithful unto death, he's going to give you the victory crown of life. He's going to give it to you. So we have this victory crown being awarded us. Okay? Now, verse 11 says, "He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. He who overcomes shall not be hurt by the second death." All right? Several things here. First of all, he who has an ear, let him hear. Remember what it is that Jesus is wanting us to understand. He's wanting us to understand that these letters to the churches are like the parables. Remember? These are like parables. They're real churches. They really existed in time. But they are like parables to us in the fact that when we look at them, we are not just to see that historical church, but to see ourselves placed alongside of them. See? They're like the parables. All right? And so Jesus was saying, listen to what I am really saying. He wasn't just telling them a story. He wanted them to understand the truth. Now, what he wants them, what are some of the things we're to take from the letter to Smyrna? Well, these are just some that I came up with. We could probably come up with more, because part of being a parable is that the more you think about it, the more what happens usually? Nothing happens? The more you understand the meaning behind it, and the more you might glean from it, right? So these are just some examples. It's probably not exhaustive, all right? So the first thing that I think he talks about in the letter to Smyrna is that he talks about the importance of living with perseverance for Jesus. Because we are in a world that tries to do what to us?
Change our mind.
Change our mind and make us be quiet. Okay? Which also, I think this letter teaches us the importance of understanding that Jesus knows our trials. In other words, this letter to Smyrna very much makes it clear that no matter what happens to us, Jesus knows about it. Now, sometimes that's very good for us to hold on to, because Satan tries to make us think that there are times when God simply doesn't what? he doesn't care, or he doesn't know. And you're left all by your what? Yeah, you're left all by your lonesome. You got to do it all by yourself. There's nobody there. Nobody cares. Nobody, you know, whatever. But if we know that Jesus knows about our trials, we also know that Jesus what? That Jesus cares, right? And when he cares, he's going to help. It's also important that we see the importance of knowing who the real enemy is. Now, who's the real enemy? It's not those people we come in contact with. They're the instrument. But who is the real enemy? Sometimes it's ourselves, but in the context of Smyrna, who was it? Satan or the devil, right? The devil is the one who was about to throw them into prison, remember? So the real enemy is the devil, is Satan. And we also, you know, it's importance, we also know the importance of knowing the purpose of our tribulations and trials. What was that purpose? You remember? Remember, it was tested to try, make trial of, for the purpose of ascertaining his quantity or what he thinks or how he will behave himself. In other words, it's designed for us to be what? Pardon? Strong. It's designed to help us understand where we are, you know, and how and who we are, and what direction we need to go. And see, the main thing about all of this is that God's not telling us that this stuff is just, you know, something we have to deal with on our own, but it will help us see where we are. And it will help us to know that he's there in our life. And if we know where we are, and he's there in our life, then we also will end up knowing what? What to do, yeah. See, that's part of what this the beauty of this is, to telling us, just reminding us that we can know what to do. Go ahead.
Well, you know, in Corinthians 10:13, he says he will not put, there is no temptation.
Exactly. I wish I'd thought of that when I was making the slide. I didn't think about that. But that's perfect, because it tells us that we're always in his hands. Nothing is going to happen that we cannot get through if we will depend upon God. In fact, is one of the promises that we keep having reminders of in Revelation is that promise in Romans chapter 8. That all things will what? Work out for good to those who love God. Not that all good things are going to happen. Has all good things happened to you, Brian? Has all good things happened to you? No. Eagle? No. Not to me either. But if I am faithful until death, all the things that happen to me are going to do what? They're going to be in the hands of God. So I can go on facing what is happening. Fact is, the promise, remember each use of the phrase, if I just read my own writing, I will get the words out, right? He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches, is accompanied by a promise, remember? Now, the promise is always conditional. It's to him who overcomes. And remember, this overcoming is part of the basic message of Revelation. When we saw the church at Ephesus, the person who overcomes is the one who repents of his lack of love and does what? Yeah, finds his first love again. In this letter, the person who overcomes is the one who is faithful until death. All right? But now the promise is... Whoops. Yeah. Okay. Shall not be hurt by the second death. Anybody got any ideas what the second death is? Before I put it on the screen. Go ahead.
It's when you say, depart, I know you're not.
Okay, you depart, I know you're not. Okay? Revelation identifies the second death as the lake of fire in Revelation 21:8. Okay? The second death is the equivalent of being, you were exactly right, thrown into this lake of fire and brimstone, it is the second or eternal death. It's depart from me. Say it.
I know you not.
I know you not. Depart from me, I know you not. All right. This death has no power over the faithful who have a part in the resurrection. That's also Revelation 20 and verse 6. So, aren't you glad that if you're a Christian who's faithful unto death, all that can happen in this life is someone can do what?
Laugh at you.
Yeah, what?
Laugh at you.
Someone can laugh at you. You could die. You know, I mean, they can kill you. But in the big scheme of things of eternity, what's that? Nothing.
Fear them. They can destroy the soul.
It's right. We don't have any fear of the second death because we're in Jesus Christ. So it's another way of saying that the one who shrinks from the sufferings of persecution and physical death will be eternally separated from God's fellowship and will be under God's condemnation. That's the reverse side, the other coin, you know, other side of the coin. Now, that's a lake of fire. That's a literal lake of fire in a volcano. Can you imagine what it would be like if we got thrown into it like this little picture I added to it? Or can you imagine living in a lake of fire, like in that painting?
Well, one time I was went with the kids to the Rouge plant down in Detroit, and they had their, where they get the Mustangs,
uh-huh.
And we walked this little catwalk, and it was 3,000 degrees
You guys, they let you see that?
Well, we were way up above it, but yes, we, you know, they had big cars.
They don't let anybody see that anymore.
Not anymore, no, this is years ago.
I wish. I wanted to go somewhere so bad.
It's not open, I don't think.
No, the Rouge plant isn't, but they don't let anybody go in any of those things anymore.
Because that's terrible. I mean,
that's hot.
That's hot. It's just, there's nothing.
That's even hotter than when our wives get mad at us, right? Oh, boy. I'm in the doghouse now. What? I don't know about that. Here's what's interesting. In Smyrna, later on, two people faced death through the persecution that was going on in the city. One of them is Ignatius. And in a letter to the Romans, chapter 5, written by Ignatius, this is what he said as he stood before this tribunal who told him, you need to stop worshiping Jesus Christ. He said, let fire in the cross, let the crowds of wild beasts, let tearings, breakings and dislocation of bones, let cutting off of members, let shatterings of the whole body, and let all the dreadful torments of the devil come upon me, only let me attain to Jesus Christ. So what was his attitude? Was he faithful unto death? Yeah. This is one of the guys who lived in Smyrna. Another one who lived in Smyrna is Polycarp, after the proconsul threatened to burn Polycarp alive, he responded this way, okay? Thou threatenest me with fire which burneth for an hour, and after a little is extinguished, but are ignorant of the fire, the coming judgment, and of eternal punishment reserved for the ungodly. But why tarriest thou? Bring forth what thou wilt. In other words, it's only going to last for a while. Bring it on. I'm going to escape what? I'm not going to go to the second death. I'm not going to go to the lake of fire. But you might. You know. So, if you want to go ahead and go down this road, that's fine with me. Just bring it on. Get it over with. I don't care. Because I'm not going to the second death. Go ahead.
Someone asked me the other day, how did I know the devil?
How did you know the devil? Interesting question. Where do you get all these questions? I mean, do you have an ad in the paper, write to Dear Phyllis? I mean, what happens? Go ahead. What did you say?
I said, God put the devil on earth, and so I said, so that he could see if we would live for him or live for God. And I said, he lets us test, God let him test us. So I related the story of Job. And
good.
It all happened. And so I said, that's why I know he's on earth. I said, these people wouldn't be killing
Maybe him. We should, you know, get her to write a column. You know, send out questions to Phyllis. Think it would work? It could. I don't know. I liked it. That's good. That's very good. All right. It's all a promise that he who overcomes shall not be hurt. Oh, hurt of the second death? I can't type, can I, when it's, you know, by the second death. Final observations about Smyrna. And as we finish looking at the church in Smyrna, it's worth noting that this persecuted and suffering church is not condemned for any fault, offering only his love and encouragement. In fact, they thought they were poverty-stricken. Remember that at the very beginning? They thought they had nothing to offer. Remember, the word poverty is a word that talks about beggary, literally. We don't have anything to offer. We can't offer anything. But from God's point of view, they were what? They were rich. What were they rich in? Spiritual things. Didn't really say, does it? But we can surmise they were rich in love for one another. They were rich in love for God. They were rich in everything that mattered because of an eternal perspective, not necessarily from a worldly perspective. So what? They didn't have much in this world. This world, as Polycarp said, you know, the fire only burns for about an hour and then it's extinguished, right? It's kind of like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego being thrown in the fire by Nebuchadnezzar. You know, they said, hey, our God's able to keep us safe, but if you want to throw us in, that's fine too. Whatever, we're going to still do what? We're going to still give glory to God. So they throw him in the fire. Remember, the guys who threw those three guys in the fire all burned up because the furnace was that hot. But instead of them burning up, what happened to them? It's one of my favorite stories. I think it was Jesus. He was with them in there. They come out of the fire. They don't even have a smell of smoke on them. Good. Carl? Just thinking about it. Smyrna for us. Now, Smyrna is just one of of the churches. Now, the next church we're going to is the church in Pergamos. All right? So let's start with Pergamos. We'll kind of work our way through a little bit. I want to tell you that I'm not happy with this segment of my PowerPoint. All right? So there are things that I'm going to rework between now and next week, but we're going to go on anyway. I found some additional stuff a little bit too late to put it in, but I'm going to put it in this next week. But so starting with verse 12, and to the church, and to the angel of the church in Pergamos, write these things: says he who has the sharp two-edged sword. I know your works and where you dwell, where Satan's throne is. And you hold fast to my name and did not deny my faith, even in the days in which Antipas was my faithful martyr, who was killed among you, where Satan dwells. But I have a few things against you, because you have there those who hold the doctrine of Balaam, who taught Balak to put a stumbling block before the children of Israel, to eat things sacrificed to idols, and to commit sexual immorality. Thus you also have those who hold the doctrine of the Nicolaitans, which thing I hate. Second time we've had the Nicolaitans. Repent, or else I will come to you quickly and will fight against them with the sword of my mouth. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To him who overcomes, I will give some of the hidden manna to eat, and I will give him a white stone, and on the stone a new name written which no one knows except him who receives it. All right. Pergamos. There's a picture of a white stone with a new name written on it. I love this artist. He's one of my favorite. And you can put pictures on PowerPoints, but I can't put the PowerPoints anywhere in public unless I pay this guy a fee, and I haven't gotten the gumption yet to pay the fee. It's $100, and I don't know. Anyway, Smyrna, these are some of the ancient ruins of Smyrna, of Pergamos. Pergamos is the official capital of Asia Minor. Now, Asia Minor is known today as what country? Turkey, yes. Pliny, the governor, called it the most illustrious city in Asia. Okay? Pergamos, which is another one of those cities that has that still exists today, is modern-day Bergama, was the first site for a temple to the Caesar cult, dedicated to Augustus Caesar in 29 BC. Now, what's the Caesar cult? What does that say? What, we've talked about this before. Yeah, they worship Caesar as a god. And Augustus Caesar was the first one to demand that kind of worship. One of the other things is that this place is known for the invention of parchment. We'll talk about what parchment is in a minute. It had a library that boasted 200,000 volumes, and ultimately the library was moved to Egypt to be presented to Cleopatra. It became known as the Alexandrian Library. All right, but at one time it was there. Okay, parchment is untanned skins of animal, especially of sheep, calf, and goat, prepared for use as a writing material. What happened? And this is also the place where books were invented. Prior to the invention of parchment and all, everything was written basically on either tablets that were and stored by being stacked, or on scrolls that were rolled up, put into tubes, and stored that way. They invented the book. Okay? They were the ones who invented the book. And every modern book owes its existence and the way we use it to this city and their invention of parchment. What's interesting was, you know, eventually this library was all moved to Alexandria to join the library that was already there and given as a gift to Cleopatra and everything else. But in the 2nd century B.C., because there was a rivalry between the two libraries, okay, the Egyptians, who were the source for papyrus, which is paper made out of what? Made out of what? Made out of reeds. They were the major source of papyrus. Because there was a rivalry between the two libraries, the king of Egypt said, "We're not going to send you any more parchment. We're not going to send you any more papyrus. No more paper for you." So all of a sudden, they had to come up with something else to write with, so they came up with parchment, and they came up with a different style over time of putting these writings together. They came up with books. So this is kind of an interesting little thing for it. They also had a temple to Zeus. This is a picture of a reconstruction there. It was up on a... Here's what's interesting is that the city had a huge mound in the middle of the city that rose about 1,000 feet high. And guess where most of the temples and important buildings of the city were originally built? On the mound. On the mound. Another thing that was interesting is they had something called an Asclepium. Don't know if I pronounced that right. I have no idea exactly how to pronounce it. But anybody know what it is? Has anybody ever heard of it? How about if I put a different word in front of that, a different word there instead of that word? Hospital. This was one of the major hospitals in the world. Okay? And what's interesting, I don't know if you can see parts of it. We'll see one close up later on. You see all of these stones right through here? This is actually the amphitheater there. But then there are a bunch of stones here, and it goes off into this direction, into the hospital complex. But when people went to this hospital and were cured, guess what they did? They took a white stone, they would take the stone and set it up, they would chisel the guy's or girl's name on it, and they would say, "Cured of such and such disease." And so everywhere in town, there would be these stones, these white stones that have a name on it. Now, interesting enough, what is it that Jesus says at the end of this? He says, if you overcome, I'm going to give you what? A new name written on a what? A white stone. In other words, now, it's a name nobody knows but you, all right? We'll talk about what that means when we get to it. But the white stone in the context of Pergamos is talking about being cured of a disease. What disease are we being cured of in Jesus Christ? Yes, the disease of sin. That's the disease we're being cured of in Pergamos. In the 2nd century AD, Hadrian developed a center and it was added to the list of wonders of the world. We'll see some more pictures of the temple to Trajan. This is part of the complex that was the hospital. And we'll see some more next time. How much time have I got left?
5 minutes.
Got 5 minutes? All right. Satan's throne is said to be here. This was a city that was dedicated to temples and sensuous worship. It's a city that referred to Zeus as the Savior. A city that created an environment for the deeds of the Nicolaitans to flourish. Okay, why did numbers 1 and 3 not show up? These are supposed to have numbers 1, 2, and 3. Let's remind ourselves. Who were the Nicolaitans? Does anybody remember the Nicolaitans? They were a people that believed what? They're not followers of Nicholas. That's what some people have thought in the past, but that's really not what it is. Nicolaitans were those who thought that they should establish a... Remember, Nicolaitans talks about Nike, conquer or victory over or conqueror of Laetans, lay people, common people. So a Nicolaitan believed what? Had to have a leader. You had to have somebody. In other words, this was the group that fostered the clergy and layperson split in the church. In the church, as it was originally designed by God, and the ideal that we have in the pages of Scripture, yes, there are leaders within the church, but all leaders are what? Huh? They're servants. And they're just part of the people. They're all of us are part of the same people. There's no one who's closer to God than anybody else. There's no one, no man who serves as an intermediary. Remember? And yet we today in Christendom consistently have systems in place that do what? You got the common people down here. You got some clergyman up here who is the go-between between you and God and who gives you the marching orders, right? I've tried that. It doesn't work. I mean, Abel still hasn't given me any check for $5,000. I'm going to try Brian next. Brian, can you give me a check for $5,000?
I got no money.
Oh, okay. See, I knew it wouldn't work anyway, right? Because it's not supposed to, right? Go ahead. We can, but it would bounce. I gave Chris, never mind me, I gave Chris one time as she was graduating from with her Master of Fine Arts, I gave her a check for $1 million written on rubber. And the check was for the first... You know, for her first great work of art, not to be cashed at any time soon. Written on the bank of rubber, I think. I don't know. Maybe it's a literal rubber check, you know. Do you still have that? She's going to cash it one of these days. I know. All right. It's a city which had the seat for emperor worship. It was also a city where the beacon of truth was beginning to dim and grow corrupt. And what was making this the truth in this city grow corrupt and to dim was the fact that there were Nicolaitans and there were those who were teaching the doctrine of Balaam. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Here's another picture. Big theater there. There's from the top down. And this is the modern city down below, okay? This is 1,000 feet down. That's a pretty big bluff in the middle of town, don't you think? Here's one of the white stones. See this? Now this one had, over time, they would begin to put more than just one name. And this one has several names. We can't read it because it's all in Greek, but you would have your name, and you would have what you were cured of. This is all over that ancient city. This is the image of the white stone that is being talked about. Go ahead.
Those were not monuments to those people. They were monuments to their ability as human.
Right. Right. They were monuments to the people who were cured. They were monuments to the fact that, hey, we cured them. It's kind of interesting. That was their claim to fame. Hey, look through this. Just walk through town. See how many people we've helped in our hospital. You know? So,
Is that Ann Arbor?
Is that Ann Arbor? No. But I think it's kind of cool, the imagery that's there. All right, we're going to stop here. And like I said, I've got a few more images of the hospital and everything else that I want to put in that I didn't get a chance to put in. So we'll pick it up here. Any last-minute questions or comments?
Well,
All right. Thanks for a good class. Appreciate it.